Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
All right, welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, as ever, obviously. And my co-hosts are Yannakis and Rodri Giggs. Yann, how you doing, mate?
Not bad, mate. You?
Yeah, I'm good. It's weird you not being here. Did you see your replacement last week?
I did, yeah. The balloon was funny.
That's right. Yeah, proportion to your head, to your body, isn't it? It's all the same.
Yeah. It was a nice you know, gesture from yourselves. I appreciate it.
Next time you need to bring your hat so I can borrow it and put it on the balloon next time.
There you go.
And Rod, how you doing, mate? You good?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Recovered from Monday.
Recovered from Monday? I thought you said recovered from London.
No, Monday.
So you didn't go back to Manchester ill?
No, I'm still here.
That's good. Fantastic. Right, joining us tonight is South American football expert and co-host of the superb podcast, Low Limit Football. It's Roberto Rojas. Buenos tardes, is it?
Buenas noches.
Noches,
here in the United States, well, here in New York. So, I'm very glad to be here. It's a real honor. You guys really do some good work. And, yeah, can't wait to talk a bit of football or soccer, as we say here in the United States.
Cheers, Robbie. Appreciate it, mate. And I really enjoyed being on your show the other day. Pretty good.
No, thank you. Me and Joe really appreciated it.
No, anytime, mate. Anytime. Well, gents, we've got a pretty packed show tonight, so let's get to it. Yeah? Leo Messi, well, his hat-trick in Argentina's 3-1 win over Ecuador left coach Jorge Sampaoli and the rest of the world running out of superlatives to describe him. The former Chile national team head coach told the media, I told the group Messi did not owe the World Cup to Argentina, but football owed the World Cup to Messi. Now, Roberto, I'll start with you, mate. Argentina's last victory in Ecuador was, I think, about 16 years ago, and they got off to the worst possible start by getting a goal down in less than a minute. However, as I said on your show, cometh the hour, cometh the man, and boy, did Messi deliver. He's absolutely amazing, isn't he? I mean, he's one of the most intriguing individual performances by the little man. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, it was remarkable. I think if one man had to step up for such a performance like this, it had to be Lionel Messi. You know, just the performance that he showed, you know, when everything was going on the line, he came up and showed up that no other player could do it. And obviously this was a struggle that Argentina had for various months leading up to this 11th hour, essentially. You know, if players not like Di Maria or Dybala or Icardi weren't unable to show up, then someone as the captain, as the leader and best player of Argentina, Lionel Messi, proved to be doing that. So, and especially after that goal that they conceded in, what, like 50 seconds or so, you know, that just proved to be more motivation to step up and really demonstrate. And basically, there's always been the stereotype that he's always leading Argentina to this World Cup, you know, that it's Messi and 10 other players, and last night, I think that was the case, but you saw a lot of individual talent from Lionel Messi, but also the help from players like Di Maria, you know, players like Mascherano, among other players. So this is something that Argentina needed. The big question now will be heading into the World Cup, assuming whatever they get in their group in December, will have to be answered. And it's just going to see how far this Argentina side can do. And how far, you know, Lionel Messi's legacy could be with this national side. You know, he hasn't won a single trophy with this side since he joined, I would say, about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, lost four finals, the Copa America final 2007, the 2014 World Cup, the Copa America in 2015, and the Centenario in 2016. So now this opportunity is the last for Lionel Messi. And with the performance that he tried to give against Ecuador last night, you only have to be motivated by him, aren't you?
Absolutely. Can't agree more, mate. Now, Rod, is there a chance that going in front so early kind of threw Ecuador's game plan out the window?
It could possibly do that, yeah. But then it could have the reverse effect with Argentina. You know, it's, when they score early on that, you've still got the whole game to. Even though it's a setback, they've still got the whole game to sort it out or to reverse the result, but It possibly might do you when people score early, but when people score early, you know, they go on to score a couple more and then the game's over, but, you know, they had a reverse effect and you've got Lionel Messi, you know, you can do that.
Mm. See, the thing is, it was a must-win game for Argentina, so even going a goal behind that early, they would have had to attack anyway. But it was
and it would have made them attack even more. You know, they're under the cosh, they need to win the game, they're 1-0 down after the first minute, so... Yeah, the data perform, and you know, unlucky enough that they did.
Absolutely. Well, gents, this leads us onto our bite back feature, and it's basically, will Messi, like Maradona, the greatest of all time in my opinion, guide Argentina to the World Cup in Russia next year? Will he guide them to a World Cup victory? And we've got quite a few responses from the Facebook group page. Dan DeLuca says, "Nah, there are better balanced teams out there. Don't think they'll win it." Marco Lima, our friend out in Brazil, says, "Nope, Di Maria is inconsistent and Sampaoli has burnt through every other striker available. Happy he'll be there, but any team that turns up in the heat of their weak defence and midfield will probably score." Now, Alex Halliday says, "I hope he does, but Argentina aren't good enough. Still the best player ever for me. In a debate that can go on forever and ever for all good points, for me, he's hands down the best and he's not finished yet." And Nodas in Australia says, "No. Although this is one of the most talented squads in recent memory, they are spineless without Messi. They are good enough to win the World Cup without him, yet no other player tries to step up and take the pressure off him. In 86, the team played for Maradona to shine, and he delivered. But they played as a team. This Argentina doesn't play for Messi to shine, and they expect him to dominate. And if he doesn't, each player looks to teammates to step up." Jan, is it his time, mate?
He's getting the end of his career, so he's got to shine now, I guess. I agree with most of the guys answering the question. I don't think Argentina are good enough to win it. And I don't think Messi will carry Argentina as much in the World Cup. There's not a lot of players around him. Yes, they've got talent in your Di Marias, your Agueros and players like that. But it seems that Argentina seem to fall at the biggest games. And I don't think Messi overall in the World Cup will end up carrying them, to be honest. I don't think Argentina will win it, no.
No. Rodri, is it written in the stars or was the other night just false hope?
Yeah, I agree with the lads. We had a conversation a couple of days ago and saying who would be in the semi-final and Argentina were not in it. So I didn't even think of Argentina, to be honest. But yeah, there's better balanced teams out there. You know the chance. I think the South American teams are not as strong as the European teams. Your teams like Spain, Germany, France, Belgium. You know, they're a lot stronger in depth. So I think the time for the South American teams to win the World Cup's done for at least a few years now anyway.
And Roberto, must Messi deliver if he's to get this monkey off his back? That's Diego's heroics in 86.
I mean, he has to. I mean, with all the accolades that he's garnered in his career, the comparisons that he's been having since he was about 18 or so, you know, and having that monkey wrench of, you know, being perceived as the best of all time, you know, to win a World Cup is only that thing that is holding him down. And it's going to be hard. I mean, look, Argentina now have 8 months to prepare for this tournament in Russia. What they need to do and improve for what they did in 2014, where Messi literally helped the team. But, you know, there's still that sort of dependency on him. You know, it can't be like that. You know, teams aren't won. Championships aren't won on one player. We can make the argument with Diego in 86, but he also had the players that helped them. And the same has to be said for Messi and the other 22 players in the World Cup. You know, that's just how it works. And it's going to be tough. And you look at other teams getting much more stronger around the world, especially in Europe, even in South America as well. You know, it's going to be much more harder than it was 4 years ago. So, yeah, I'm skeptical. I don't think he might win this time, but, you know, with Lionel Messi, what he's demonstrated in recent years, anything is possible.
Mm. And not to mention Sampaoli, who's a fantastic coach. I mean, he loves tinkering with this system, but he's got this 3-3-3-1 going on at the moment, which is bizarre if you look at it from an outsider's perspective. But this guy has achieved so much at international level. I wouldn't put it past him taking them as far as he could possibly get them.
Yeah, it's a really a weird formation, a formation that we haven't seen, I think, since, you know, Marcelo Bielsa took charge in 2002 and where they failed to get out of the group stage. So now with this return, you know, it's going to be much more tougher for an Argentina side that we're used to having four in the bag or playing three up front or two up front. So it's going to be difficult now with this formation. But Sampaoli, I trust him as well, and what he's been able to do, not only at Chile with the Copa America, but also at Sevilla and the remarkable work that he did there. You can't really go against Sampaoli. I think that if he finds the team and he finds the way his plan, if he finds the plan that he thinks the team will work with, then I think Argentina will go far in the World Cup.
Absolutely. Well, Argentina joined Brazil, Uruguay and Colombia in the automatic qualification spots, with Peru taking fifth, and they face New Zealand in the playoff. Now, Roberto, your beloved Paraguay won't be booking their flights to Moscow, unfortunately, next year, mate, but neither will Alexis Sanchez and Arturo Vidal, as Chile fell at the final hurdle. Now, this is a major embarrassment for the back-to-back Copa America winners, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been done since Colombia in 2002, but I think some of the cracks were starting to break in. You know, I go back to when Chile were playing the Confederations Cup, and they scored, what, I think like three or four goals during that whole tournament. They made it to the final because they beat Portugal in the semifinals. But they were just outclassed in that tournament by Chile, even to an extent to Portugal as well. And, you know, with this generation is starting to end. You know, your players with your Alexis Sanchez, your Charles Arangues, your Vidals, your Claudio Bravos, you know, they're not getting any younger. And the fault that Chile has now is that there's no one coming up. You look at other national teams around the world. You look at Venezuela, you know, the finalist of the U-20 World Cup final. They obviously aren't going to prepare for this World Cup since they were eliminated, but now they are definitely preparing for 2022, you know. And that's not the same for Chile, you know. There's no one showing up. The youth teams have been lackluster, to say the least, disappointing. So it's going to be hard for Chile to bounce back after the success that they've had in the two Copa Americas and even in the World Cup there. You know, I think today is, well, last night was the end of the golden generation that Chile had for, I would say, about nearly a decade.
That's right. So what about Paraguay then? Because as far as I'm aware, they've got somewhat of a mixed bag when you're talking about the squad. I mean, you've got players with experience and relatively young footballers. I mean, how much pressure is on Sanabria to deliver further down the line?
Well, it's not going to be only just Sanabria. It's going to be among other players. I think the expectation that has always been given to Paraguay after they made four straight World Cups from 1998 to 2010 is to deliver. You know, they thought it was a birthright, same along lines with Brazil and Argentina and other countries like that, to qualify for every single World Cup to come. And that wasn't possible. We saw the emergence of Colombia in 2014. We saw Chile. Other national teams are getting much more stronger than before. And with Paraguay, that isn't the case. So, you know, when the process that happened with Paraguay in this World Cup, you know, they had Ramon Diaz as their coach at the start of the competition, only to get sacked after the Copa America last year. In came another manager, Arce, who didn't really have a lot of fans at the start. You know, many people thought that he wasn't really a good coach, like a tactical coach similar to Diaz. So it's a real problem now for Paraguay to look forward into missing another World Cup. You know, a generation, or my generation, of watching the team that made the quarterfinals in 2010 miss it out for another World Cup. But I am I have hope. I have hope in this youth team. You know, you look at the under-17 side. You know, they just made it to the round of 16 in India. So there's obviously hope there, and they always have emerging players. They always will. You know, when a country like Paraguay, 6 million people, all they do is play football, that's just going to help them move forward into the success. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. Other national teams are getting stronger, some are declining, so it's going to be much more harder than it was in the past. And you just have to have time. I think some people are just impatient that they want change so quickly, like in Argentina or Brazil, but that's just the work of a process. You know, other national teams maybe have had that experience and ended up being more successful in the long term. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to see what they do in the next qualifying process, but now the focus on whoever is the new manager, or to have the handle of those players to prepare for the next 18 months, you know, have some friendlies before the World Cup and before the following Copa America in Brazil in 2019.
That's right, absolutely. And Rodri, Vidal has retired from international football, and with no World Cup to worry about, can you see Sanchez staying at Arsenal beyond January?
It's a difficult question. Possibly. It depends if City come in and make another bid. You know, you just. I'm sure his contract runs out at the end of the season.
That's right. Yeah. So he can sign a pre-contract agreement in January with any team.
Yeah. Well, if he does that, that's going to be difficult. You can't see him signing a pre-contract, but that means it'd be up in the air. So I think if he's going to go, he's going to go in the winter window. But you could definitely see him moving there, but. Yeah, I could definitely see him moving there.
Great stuff. And Jan Falcao has been accused of match fixing after telling Peru's players with 15 minutes to go to hold on to a 1-1 draw because it would benefit both sides. There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
I saw that.
Anything wrong with that?
Well, it is. It's match fixing, isn't it? It's two teams holding up for a result and stopping another country emerging, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you saw Guerrero's goal.
Yeah, I know. The free kick, which was indirect.
It was an indirect free kick.
Yeah.
That's right. So does that technically count as an own goal then?
No, because see, this is the thing. Like, it's an indirect free kick. If the goalkeeper leaves it and it goes in, it doesn't count.
Then it's a free kick.
But he's got a hand to it.
The keeper touching it.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a weird one. Even that goal was strange.
Yeah, but come on, it's Ospina for crying out loud.
Yeah, he made the howler the other day as well, didn't he? So, I'll tell you what, though, these things, what Falcao did, does happen. If people out there are naive and think that it doesn't happen on a pitch, or people don't know the results, or they don't. I mean, we've seen it before where half an hour to go, a result might be 0-0, and it suits both teams, and they just. Defender plays it to the other centre half, to the left back, to the right back, and they carry on playing, and nobody attacks the ball. So it does happen, you know. Communication through the touchline, you know, everybody knows that a 1-1 result sends them both through, or it's a convenient result. So it does happen.
Mm. I seem to remember it happening with United once. Was it against Blackburn? I think your memory is better than mine.
It was Blackburn,
yeah.
Yeah, when it was a draw settled, yeah, and United did an attack for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's
after
right.
Rooney scored the penalty.
There you go.
So, you know, it happens.
It happens, exactly. Robbie, you probably know this already, but Chile shot themselves in the foot by complaining about an ineligible player Bolivia fielded in their 1-1 draw earlier on in the campaign. The name Nelson Cabrera will haunt Chile for a while, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really hard to figure out that even if those points did not go his way, they would have been fifth. So in a way, karma strikes back to them, even if they want that to help them. Some of these things happen for a reason in South America. That's just the craziness that happens to a lot of people in this side of the world. I mean, obviously, for Eula in Europe, it's very hard to watch these games being so late at night or basically around this time here in the United States. But it's just a part of the craziness that happens here in South America.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know the story, Cabrera is actually from Paraguay. He's from Roberto's country. And he represented Bolivia against Chile and against Peru. Now, Chile drew 1-1 against Bolivia. They complained and they were awarded the game 3-0. Peru actually lost 1-0 to Bolivia. The same player played. And Peru were awarded the 3-0 win. Now, as Robert said, Chile would have actually gone above Peru into fifth on goal difference. Again, as I said,
crazy how things work.
Sorry?
Crazy how things work either for you or against you.
There you go. But you know what? It's not only in South America. It happens everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There you go. Well, look, it was a bad night for the US national team as their 2-1 loss against Trinidad and Tobago coupled with Panama's 2-1 win over Costa Rica means the USA won't be heading to Russia. Roberto, make no mistake about it, mate. This is actually a huge setback for American soccer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you make 7 straight World Cups and then miss this one, and obviously, you know, I'll go back to what I said about Paraguay. You know, when you make 4 straight World Cups, you always have that birthright to... that you're expected to qualify to the World Cup. The same can be made for the United States, you know, alongside Mexico, who also struggled at the last stage to qualify for the World Cup without the help of the Americans. Now the reverse has happened. So it's going to be a tough situation now. You know, that generation of players are going to be haunted by the memories of Trinidad. for a while, there's going to be a lot of questions asked about, you know, the way the development of the game has been played and the way coaching is. Just there's a lot of problems that I can go out for maybe 5 hours to describe what needs to be fixed in U.S. soccer. But in the end, I think these problems were starting to crack for a while, even during this process. They weren't able to win away. That's one of the big reasons for this failure. Obviously, they lost two at home to Mexico and Costa Rica. And after the 4-0 game against Panama, you know, everyone thought it was going to be okay, that they were going to qualify for the World Cup last night, and it didn't go their way. So even if results go your way, there's still problems emerging. And now with this failure to the World Cup, could be a silver lining. It could be a silver lining for them. It will allow people to ask the questions, to say what is wrong. You know, it will allow people to remove any toxic problems happening in U.S. soccer, and to hope that this will never happen again in the future.
And Rodri, Tim Howard, DeAndre Yedlin, Michael Bradley, Christian Pulisic, Jose Altidore, Clint Dempsey. These are just players we know all about and players that know about big games, but they fail to deliver. To finish below Panama and Honduras, it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, but you know, even though they are decent players there, they are aging players, and you know, it's a young man's game now. You need to get about the pitch, and even though they've got the experience, they just did, like Robbie said, they need to win a few games away from home, and obviously losing the two at home has not helped. And you know, you can have all the experience in the world, but you need that sprinkle of youth and that sprinkle of quality, and they just haven't got that in America, I'm afraid. But same thing with England. I think the influx of foreign players is hurting the national team. So I don't know. Maybe it is a silver lining from you never know.
Yeah, I'm just confused how a country that size can't produce quality players. I mean, don't get me wrong, in Brazil, you know, I don't know.
I think it's getting better there, but it's like Robbie was saying with Paraguay. It's a process, and you know, you've got to wait a few more years, and maybe you've got to suffer before you come out the other way. And you know, there's a lot better coaches over there now. There's a lot of ex pros that are going over there now, so.
I think it's perceived arrogance that maybe was given to the United States after the World Cup. You know, they got out of the group of death with Germany, Portugal, and Ghana, and they held Belgium all the way. And I think that perceived arrogance to say, hey, we can beat anyone in the world now. And that isn't the case. And now, so they have to, now they're dropped back down to earth and back to reality that, you know, it isn't like that. You know, you could beat whoever you want in the world. But if you need to do this for various years, for various processes, various generations, you know, it's not one and done, and that it's all, everything will be fine in the future. You know, this has to go on for years.
Yeah, it's not about being a little bit consistency as well. Exactly. Same thing with Wales. You know, we went to semi-final of the European Cup, and then we don't go to the World Cup. It's frustrating, but you know, there's a lot of strong teams out there. There's a lot of teams that are emerging. They're getting better. They've got better coaches, better managers. So it's difficult.
Absolutely, that's right. And Jan, I know many journalists in the States were relieved to see the back of Jurgen Klinsmann, but this is a case of be careful what you wish for, isn't it? Bruce Arena did absolutely nothing to prove Klinsmann wrong, did he?
No, he didn't. For me, the problem with America, in a sense of, they've spent a lot of money, you know, with MLS soccer over the years to try and improve it. And also they emphasize a lot on their youth structure over there. Mm-hmm. As we know, yourself and Rodri, with Mark Meredith being out there, he does a lot of work with, you know, youth players and stuff like that to emerge them to one day get into the US national team and improve them. And the fact that they spend a lot of money to come behind, like you said, to Honduras and Panama, it's a massive, massive embarrassment for a nation like America. If you think about the population and the amount of, you know, scholarships and people playing, you know, soccer, as they call it over there, and trying to emerge, it's embarrassing. I mean, I don't know if you saw the what's his name? Twyman, I think he was, that used to play for the USA. Yeah. Yeah, he came out and he absolutely blasted everybody on national telly. I mean, the passion that the guy showed, you know, he showed, I guess, what most Americans thought about the whole campaign. But like you said, just Bruce Arena went there, they've gone backwards. And, you know, like you said, maybe they were better off with Klinsmann at the helm.
See, the thing is, from what I understand with the structure, the developmental structure in the US, is that a lot of the MLS clubs have got affiliates which are based in the USL. And we know Mike Kelleher, who's the CEO of Charleston Battery, very well. He came from West Ham's academy. He was in the international academy, and you know he's told us about the infrastructure of the club and how they want to grow. And obviously, as Rod said, it's a process. But this is the thing. I know the affiliate program has only been going on for a year, year and a half, maybe. So you're not going to bear fruit straight away. But you'd have thought that when you see the likes of Toronto and Chicago Fire, who've invested heavily in youth development, not just in their cities, but across other states as well, you'd kind of expect that, I'd say a return on investment, but then you look at the players that they're bringing through, like, for example, Pulisic. He's playing in Germany. He's been out there for God knows how long. You know, so you got a question where it's going wrong. Obviously, it's going to take time. It's an evolution. It's a process, as Van Gaal says. But unfortunately, I don't know if the United States has that patience. Do they have it, Rob? Because I know that it's got a lot to do with sponsors and all that kind of stuff. So is anyone going to get enough time to bring through players?
No, I mean, we live in a world of what have you done for me lately? And unfortunately, that's the case for the United States, you know? It's a gimme, gimme. They want everything to be done now. And they don't like wait. They're impatient. Unfortunately, that's just how it works. I mean, a lot of problems have to be solved going from the way we coach our youth, the way that we develop our youth, from the way we view the sport differently, you know, the culture. Obviously, this culture has been emerging, maybe thankfully, to the minorities. Of this big country, but with a country of 300 million, you know, and using the example of the women's who are three-time world champions in the World Cup, you know, for the men's, it's just embarrassing to see something like this happen, you know, and it goes back to either high school soccer or college soccer where it's absolutely terrible. You know, many people want to come to this country to develop and be that kind of player, but, you know, it just stagnates a bit when you go here. It's really not the best way to develop yourself as a player. Case in point, Pulisic. Imagine what Pulisic would be if he was not developed. He's from Pennsylvania. So imagine if he was part of the Philadelphia Union Academy. He would not be near the player he is today. And think about it. He's our best player, and he's 19 years old. The reason why? Because of his development in Germany. You know, and we need to stop being afraid of trying to do everything our way. You know, we need to learn from other countries. We need to learn from England, from France, Germany, Spain, Brazil, Argentina, all those big powerhouse countries to see how their success can be replicated for us, or at least to some extent, even to Mexico, even our biggest rivals. We need to learn from them. We need a lot of learning, but we also need those in charge of U.S. soccer to clean house, essentially, and to really have people who care about this sport and not just view it as a business, but to view it for passion and love to hopefully achieve that goal. And it is to win the World Cup.
One of the,
I'll tell you what though, Stel.
Go on.
Sorry, mate. What I thought made it worse yesterday for me with the Americans is the fact that Trinidad were already out. It wasn't like they played a side that needed the points and they were battling with the USA to qualify. Trinidad had absolutely nothing to play for, you know. And to my knowledge, I think if the Americans got a point, they would have made the playoffs. So the worst result was to get beat, to get out, and they actually managed to do that.
You know something. Before this game, like a day or so before, ESPN gave the United States a 97% chance to qualify for the World Cup. I think they also gave them maybe a 34% chance to make the playoffs at least, and a 3% chance, or 2-3%, something like that, to miss it. So the worst possible thing happened last night. And it's going to cost them. And maybe there's a silver lining to all this, but we just have to wait and see. I mean, you can't do anything else about it. You kind of just need to be patient. You know, it's needed. I think it was supposed to be needed for a long time. As much as I don't want to admit it, you know, I think this might be good enough for the United States. Maybe a lot of people will hate on me for this, but I think missing the World Cup could indeed help them in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know the under-17s started off pretty well the other day.
Yep.
And I think they've got five players that play outside the United States. Mm-hmm. One is actually at Ajax and one at Paris Saint-Germain.
Yep. And one more at Bremen, Josh Sargent.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, that's right. So there obviously is that scouting network there. So they do have promising players, but it's just about their development and whether they're going to get the opportunities. But, you know, we can talk about this later when it comes to the Dutch national team, because I'm pretty sure they've got similar issues. But Robert, what can you tell us about Panama?
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprise story, you know. It's ironically enough, it was the United States who eliminated Panama 4 years ago for them heading to their first ever World Cup. Mm-hmm. But now you're looking at a side that obviously was in party mode. Many people did not even expect them to qualify for the World Cup after they lost to the United States a couple of days ago. And they were able to get the result against Costa Rica over there in Panama City that sent all of the country jubilant. And you know, you got to feel happy for them. It's always happy to see new countries make it to the World Cup. You know, they're the 79th country to do so. We saw Iceland qualify for the World Cup as well a couple of days ago. So now we just have to look for Panama, who, you know, they love the sport. You know, they've always wanted to not be considered the punching bag of CONCACAF, you know, and now they finally have their chance to demonstrate what they're capable of. The biggest stage.
Robert, did you see the ball boy kick the ball away in the 94th minute?
Yeah, I did. You got to do anything you can to help. Yeah, you got to do anything you
Absolutely.
Can to help.
That was brilliant.
There you go. Well, just a bit of trivia for you. You guys probably know this already, but Fox spent $400 million on the World Cup TV rights and the USA didn't qualify. Oops.
Yep.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oops. All right, moving swiftly on to the European qualification section, and Arjen Robben's brace in the Netherlands 2-0 win over Sweden wasn't enough to join the elite next summer. The Dutch needed to win 7-0 to book a playoff place, although Dick Advocaat would have loved to have tempted fate again. Gents, this is the second consecutive tournament the Dutch have failed to reach. Now, their problems run much deeper than having to rely on Ryan Babel, though. First, there's the old boys club, in inverted commas, as the Dutch FA, who are very set in their ways, put it that way. Then there's the issue with youth development. Now, as you guys are probably aware, many Dutch players are snapped up by Europeans, or should I say Europe's elite, at a very young age. They're either left to rot in the reserves or they're farmed out to much lower quality sides, which obviously hinders their development. Now, truth be told, they're better off staying in the Netherlands because they'll get game time even as teenagers. The future doesn't look so bright now, does it? Rod?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Well, it doesn't, obviously, because they haven't qualified, but you roll off the players that you say, we have, which one was the one? Was it United last year?
Depay.
Depay.
He come full of goals, and then comes to the Premier League, and he's a flop. You know, there's a few that's done that before, but the coaching in Holland is probably the best around anywhere around the world, arguably, so. You know, it's just the quality of the league. It's not the best, so maybe they should stay at the clubs. The Feyenoords, the Ajax is a little bit longer and develop more as a player. Because obviously the coaching over there is second to none. It's like I say, it's one of the best in the world. So yeah, it all boils down to money, mate. And you know, and the national team's suffering from it at the moment because you know they've got a rich history. Even though they've not won the World Cup, they've always been. No good participants in it, and they won't be there.
Yeah,
they're not producing the players anymore, are they? Still,
do you know what they are? But the problem is they're not Dutch. They're all German or they're Moroccan or they're Swedish.
But that's what I mean. It's affecting the national team because you know, as we're all aware, the coaching is not the problem in Holland. It's the fact that I mean, you know, I don't want to be too critical, but when Janssen is Holland's main man as a striker, and yeah. Well, it says it all, doesn't it, to be fair? So, you know, it underlines a massive problem. I mean, they should get Louis van Gaal back. Ever since he left, they haven't qualified.
Well, yeah, you know, they won't go for Van Gaal, mate. He's burned his bridges with their
candidate. Jan's got a point there, to be fair. They haven't really got anyone up front to get them the goals. They've got adequate players in other areas around the pitch, but not that quality striker that's going to get them the goals and ultimately winning the game.
Well,
and of course, Robben now as well.
Let me tell you their lineup for the Sweden game. It was Cillessen in goal, who isn't playing for Barcelona. They got Tete, yeah. Van Dijk, who's played, what, 4 games this year, if that. Rekic. Yeah. And they got Ake at left back. Right? Midfield.
Ake, the Bournemouth Ake.
Yeah. Yeah. Midfield, Vilhena, Dali Blind, and Wijnaldum. And up front, Babel, Janssen, and Robin.
It doesn't strike any fear, does it?
It doesn't. But see, the thing is, with the Dutch, they go through these phases whereby, if you remember that, okay, 74, 78, they got to a World Cup final. Then they didn't do anything till what? 88, when they won the European Championships. And then they had a decent France 98. Or they had a pretty okay Euro 96. They did decent France 98. Then they did absolutely nothing until 2010 when they got to the World Cup final. And then, obviously, 2014, they walloped Spain and they got to the semis. And I think the same thing is going to happen again with them. We probably won't see them for another 8 years doing anything. But in that 8 years, you just never know what they could produce. You just never know. I mean, I was speaking to Linton. Obviously, he's a friend of ours and he's a Dutch football agent. And he says, you know, from top to bottom, it's a mess because people are getting jobs because of who they know. And for Ruud Gullit to be assistant coach, I mean, that says it all, really. I mean, he's one of the biggest managerial failures in the game, isn't he?
Absolutely. No, I agree, 100%.
Yeah. Well, Rod, last summer, it was quite incredible, wasn't it, mate? You were on the high for 4 weeks. What's gone wrong with Wales? Too much expected of them this time around?
Oh, just dropping points with silly games. Georgia away and just dropping points. Ultimately lost them, especially that you'd expect them if you give them the chance, you know, to get into the playoffs. Right, you're gonna go straight through like was it Serbia won it, Slovakia?
Yep,
Serbia.
Yeah, if you got the chance to go into the playoffs with the last game, Ireland at home, you know, you'd expect them to get a result, even though we didn't have Gareth Bale. Even though all the possession we had, you'd expect them to get a result. And ultimately, Ashley Williams and the keeper have cost us. So, had to take, but you've got to look things in perspective. You know, we've got to the semi-final. We've not been beat at home for 4 years. We're progressing, and it depends now if Coleman stays or if he goes. Hopefully he stays, but... You know, you never know. He might want to move on to pastures new.
Do you think he's running out of ideas, Rod?
No, I just think he's been lucky, mate. I think Georgia, they should have got a result there, and I think Ireland away, they possibly should have got a result there as well. So, no, it was a group that really they should have at least got in the playoffs And they failed. I don't think it's Chris Coleman's fault. I just think it's, you know, Gareth Bale. We missed him in the last 2 games. He would have helped. And ultimately, you know, at that top level, little tiny mistakes. You know, and Ashley Williams making a few at the minute. He's just give the ball away and they've punished us. So it's just hard to take it. But, you know, you've just got to move on and put things into perspective of where we were 8 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, so it's not too bad.
It's just, you know, Wales have been unlucky over the years. I mean, obviously, there's that Paul Bodin penalty when they hit the bar against Romania. And this one is another defensive mistake. It could have been avoided. It should have been avoided.
It should have been avoided. The keeper shouldn't give it the ball. But when he does give him the ball, you know, he shouldn't give it away. And when he does give it away, he's got to stop the cross from coming in. So there's a load of mistakes that's happened there. It's just like I say, it wasn't to be. And it's something that I suppose that Ashley Williams and the keeper have to live with. But, you know, he's been fantastic for us for the last few years. So you can't give him too much stick. But it's just like I say, it was a poor mistake to make in a crucial game.
Mm. And Roberto, Iceland qualified for their first ever World Cup. They've captured the hearts and imaginations of most football fans, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, we can go back to what they did at Euro 2016, where they made all the way to the quarterfinals and, you know, captured the hearts of beating, well, maybe for some of us, beating England and then the other matches happening.
Most of us, mate.
Yes, most of us, absolutely. So, you know, that I think that motivation helped them with this qualification to the World Cup. And, you know, we were talking about processes from different countries, you know, Paraguay, the United States, even Wales, to state the Netherlands. You got to look at Iceland as well. You know, they've waited a long time for this, and I think the success that they've had from the Euros helped them even more further to what was really a tough group. You have to give the respect to them for them getting out of a tough group with Croatia, Turkey, and Ukraine as well. So credit to them. And, you know, I think it might be, I think with the story that they've had since the Euros and, you know, with the population of only 300,000, you know, I think they might be the second team of all football fans for the next World Cup.
That's right. That's right. Well, the teams that have qualified so far are Brazil, Germany, Argentina, Belgium, Colombia, Costa Rica, England, Egypt, France, Iceland, Iran, Japan, Mexico, Nigeria, Panama, Poland, Portugal, Saudi Arabia, Serbia, South Korea, Spain, and Uruguay. Now, Rod, Mo Salah scored twice for Egypt, giving them a qualification, and then he had a school named after him. Pretty amazing, pretty amazing scenes, though, weren't they?
Yeah, I've seen the highlights of that game. I've seen him when... who were they playing again?
Congo.
Congo, I think it
Congo,
was.
Yeah,
Congo, yeah. I seen him when Congo scored, and he was flat out. He was distraught, and then, you know, he goes and scores the winner with minutes to go. It's a fantastic story. It's great for him. He's on fire at the minute for him, and, you know, it looked like a good game to be at, that one.
He's got some balls to be taking a penalty at that stage, isn't it? With so much riding on it.
Yeah, that some players want to be in that position. Some players don't. You know, some players don't even think about missing. They just think of, I'm going to win it and I'm going to score. And obviously, he's one of them people.
Mm. Good job.
96 minutes still.
Sorry?
96th minute it was.
96th minute, wow.
Yeah, if it was the 96th minute, if I scored a goal from the country, I'd just be grabbing the ball.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't think of missing. So you just right. If you did, then that'd be a different story.
Then I'm out of the country.
yeah, exactly.
The
yeah.
scenes, there was one guy on crutches, he didn't have any legs, and he's doing like a somersault with the crutches. It's mental. Like, that's what football does to people, man. It just gives them a new lease of life. Crazy.
It just shows the passion that some countries, you know, go through, the people, what it really, really means to them. I don't think a lot of nations have that. There's certain nations that have that, you know, that drive, that determination. And I think a lot of other countries need to kind of take that on board. Mm-hmm. And England's one of them, to be fair.
Yeah, that's right. Jan, Australia scraped past Syria and they faced Honduras in a playoff. Now, head coach Ange Postecoglou, he's decided to quit in November with or without qualification. Something tells me the Australian FA and Dutch FA have got a lot in common here. Strange decision, isn't it?
I think so. I think he's done all right. Australia a bit on the mould with America. I think there's a lot of expectancy for Australia to do well. And let's face it, they don't play a lot of good sides over there. I think it's just them and New Zealand, really, that kind of battle it out all the time. So to get to this stage, it's a little bit of an embarrassment for them. I watched the game, actually, funny enough, against Syria. They didn't impress me. I thought they were terrible, to be fair. And who came up trumps again? 36-year-old 2K girl.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
37,
yeah.
Tim Cahill, who, again, leading the line for Australia. Again, another nation with the population that they have, and they're relying on a 37-year-old to get them to the playoffs. It's a strange one. And Syria, I don't know if you saw the game, hit the post in the 120th minute. Mm-hmm. So they were unlucky not to go through as well, and they had 10 men at the end. So. It was squeaky bum time for Australia, to say the least. So, I don't know. I fancy Honduras, to be honest, over the two legs. I think Honduras
might have the edge. Mate, I completely agree with you. I mean, look, if you look at the Australian national team, a lot of their players, in fact, most of their players actually play their trade outside of Australia.
Yeah.
Australia, a lot are in the UK, a lot are in Germany. You got some that play for your Western City Wanderers, sorry, Western Sydney Wanderers and Melbourne Victory and all that
Melbourne
kind of stuff.
City,
but they're not established. They're not big names. I think the only one there is really Tim Cahill that bears any kind of
Rogic as well at Celtic.
Rogic as well, yeah. But again, it goes back to the infrastructure. You know, I'm talking from experience and people that I've spoken to that know about A-League clubs. You know, some of them would rather have a German manager because they reckon that, you know, the German infrastructure is the best, which it may be, but they don't give them time. They gave us one certain club, I'm not going to mention their names, they had the Spanish manager for 3 or 4 seasons, and because he didn't win in the league, they sacked him. So they brought in a German guy with absolutely zero Bundesliga experience, and I can't understand it, because the two best managers, and I said this time and time again, the two best managers are Australian, because they're the two managers that their sides contested the A-League final last season. It was Kevin Muscat and the other guy, I forget his name, but the two Australian head coaches. So why do you need to bring in a foreign man? I don't understand. I really don't.
I don't know, sometimes the foreign manager kind of, so to speak, is appealing. You know, oh, we've got a German manager, automatically they might think he's good, and, you know, players might raise their game. It, you know, like you said, it doesn't always work like that, you know? And especially, like you said, with the two Australian managers. Muscat's done well at Melbourne Victory, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I think the other one you're talking about, I'm not sure of his name, I think it's the Sydney FC one you're talking about.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And he's done really well as well. And Sydney FC are a very good side in Australia. So why don't they deserve a chance? Surely they would want the job.
So, Graham Arnold. I think he's the one that's going to be.
Graham Arnold.
I think he's going to take over from Postecoglou, I think.
Possibly. I think he deserves a shot.
I think
they're a bit of the American mold. Like I said, they need a lot of young players to come through there now. You know, they're aging a little bit, Australia as well, and a fresh blood is needed there.
Yeah, but again, same thing with MLS, same thing with the Dutch national team. Where are the players coming from? Where are they? If they don't have the infrastructure there, then where are they coming from? Obviously, the other two, as I mentioned, they've got the money, they've been spending there. You know, the Dutch have got a history, as Rod said, a history of bringing through players. MLS, they're trying to do that with all their clubs, especially with the affiliate program. But in Australia, I don't see that happening. Yeah, I know that they've got, you know, youth teams and whatnot, but it just seems that there isn't much emphasis on developing youngsters. It's more about, oh, let's bring in a few foreign players and, you know, back into their careers, like your Thomas Sorensens and whatnot, your Mac, what's his name?
McCormack's gone there now.
McCormack's gone there, but the fella that was at Middlesbrough, the Italian fella, went to Empoli as well. Macaroni. He's gone there.
Macaroni.
Yeah. He's gone there. So, what do they want? It's just a quick fix.
I think maybe with the foreigners going there is maybe to give their league more of a name, so to speak. Just put it on the map.
Yeah, but the Indian league has brought in more players and bigger names. Some of them have been managers, like Zambrotta, Materazzi. They've been managers. Diego Forlan, Roberto Carlos. They played in India.
That's a 2-month league, though. I think that's a little bit different.
It still attracted these names. Why hasn't Australia?
Money.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So
they're not even willing to spend big money on these marquee. Forget your David Silva, because the club he joined are owned by Man City's owners. That doesn't really count. But when you look at your Sydneys, your Western Sydney Wanderers, your Newcastle Jets, whatever they're called. I know Newcastle signed Emil Heskey a few years ago, but Emil Heskey. Yeah.
Del Piero as well.
Michael Bridges as well.
Del Piero's out there. That's right. So
Robbie Fowler. Robbie Fowler out there.
He was for a while.
He was out there, yeah. They got what's it, Perth Glory got Andy Keogh up front.
There you go,
isn't it?
big names.
Yeah.
Stellar names, right?
Yeah.
Let's not knock him. One more thing before we go, chaps. Rod, Paul Scholes, apparently he's been lined up for the Oldham Athletic job. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does, because he's an Oldham fan. It's, even though he's not got no coach experience, but you know, he's obviously he'll be in touch with Richie Wellens, who's been there, who's won the last three games. So obviously Richie Wellens might stay on with him. Who knows? I don't know. It's a strange one for the reason why, not because he doesn't know what he's doing, obviously he does, but the situation they're in, even though Richie's done brilliant and won the last three games, for him to go in now, it'd be a tough job for him, but you know, I'm sure it's one that he'd relish and one that he'd take on, or he wouldn't have gone for the interview.
Yeah. The thing is, whenever a new position becomes available, you hear the names like Steven Gerrard and Paul Scholes named and that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, okay, I understand they're fantastic. They're huge names. They've won everything there is to win. But when you step into that managerial hot seat, it's a completely different world. I'm just curious.
It is. And that's just something he's got to weigh up. You know, it's the club that he loves. It's the club that he watched as a kid. He didn't go and watch Manchester United as a kid. He was on Boundary Park watching. So it's the club that he loves as a kid. But, you know, if things go wrong for him, the fans could turn on him. It could be a nasty experience for him. But I'm sure that's the chance he's willing to take, because he loves the club and he thinks he can get him out of Mire and do well for him. Good luck to him if he does. But I'm sure, I hope he would think about keeping Richie Williams on, because he's done a fantastic job since he's been there.
Yeah, they used to have a passive pitch in the past as well.
I know he knows Richie, because he's obviously been at United, and Richie's played at Salford in the last couple of years, so they've obviously spoke to each other and they obviously know each other. But like I say, it'd be a bit harsh if they didn't give Richie anything and just let him go, because he's done a fantastic job. Like I said, we're winning the three games on the bounce.
Yeah. Well, they ripped up that plastic pitch years ago, didn't they? So they got a proper pitch.
Yeah, well, the pitch is lovely. I've played on the pitch a few times. It's a lovely pitch down there. It's a nice place to play football. They've got a nice new ground. It's a nice pitch.
There you go. Roberta sitting there thinking, what the hell is an Oldham Athletic?
It's cold in the winter, man. It's very, very cold, but it's a nice place to play football.
Roberta, did you understand the word that we were talking about there?
Yes, I have, actually. No worries. Don't worry.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, guys, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on. Robert, thank you very much. I call you Robert and call you Roberto because that's your name.
Call me whatever.
Rob. Thanks for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it. Do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handles so they can get in contact with you and tell us a bit more about Low Limit Football?
Yeah, absolutely. You can obviously follow me on Twitter at RobertoRojas97. I'm also the co-host, as you mentioned, Stel, of Low Limit Football. We've had you on a couple of days ago. And we have a show every Monday where we talk basically football from around the world. We have guests from, you know, anyone from around the world as well. You know, journalists, players, anyone else that we can think of. We have it every Monday at 6 p.m. in the United States, here in New York, well, here in the East Coast, which is 11 for you guys here in England. And, yeah, I mean, just tune in, you know, with the World Cup coming up soon. You know, we're gonna have a new thing where we're going to preview every single of the 32 nations that have qualified with special guest that's an expert of those countries. So I really hope you guys tune in, and hopefully we get the reception that we deserve.
Yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic show. You and Joe, you know, do a brilliant job. So long may it continue.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Great stuff. Jan, do you want to give us your Twitter address or handle, or whatever you call it?
Yannickus J.
Fantastic. You can go now, because it looks a bit dodgy.
Yeah, and have a shave.
I'm surprised I haven't been robbed.
Listen, robber, go and have a shave.
Sorry?
You look like a robber. Go and have a shave.
Yeah. Oh, cheers, mate. Maybe that's why no one's approached me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
God, he's more like a hamburger, mate.
Pardon?
He's more like a hamburger.
Look at that small burglar in that car.
Rod, what's your Twitter handle?
I go away with it tonight.
You never get away with it, mate. You never get away with it, live or not live.
Yeah,
you never get away with it.
Adjust these modern seats now, so you look taller.
I know, it's a bigger car, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rod, what's your Twitter handle, mate? Before this gets out of hand.
Rod James Giggs.
Excellent, wonderful. Right, guys, we are on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Join it. It's fun. We'll be back on Tuesday where we will be reviewing the Premier League games. And there's a new little segment with Sid Lambert. We will be talking about the past, the early 90s, and we'll be reviewing Manchester United 2, Liverpool 2 from the season 92-93. Lots more to come from Shoot Defence, and we'll be back soon. Take care.